We're 27 episodes into the 1840 podcast, and you know what? We've never done one about timber, which is a bit of a faux pas considering we're out of timber with 185 years worth of timber history on our side. So, today's the day we change all that. We're going to do our first ever timber episode, and today it's going to be about wood panelling, and specifically OSB, MDF, and chipboard, P5 chipboard, or particle board, whichever you two experts decide is the right terminology. Joining me today for this conversation are two really, really well-known characters from the timber industry with over 87 years of experience between the pair. I'm joined by Andy Moore, the National Sales Manager at Kronospan, and I'm joined by my good colleague, Gary Froggitt, who's our Timber Category Manager. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Are you pleased to be here?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Right, well, just relax. Don't look quite as nervous as you are and stop holding hands. We'll get through. Our audience is very mixed. It's not all timber people. So with the sake of teaching a few people watching this to suck eggs, what I'd like you to do is just tell everybody what are OSB, MDF, and chipboard, particle board, P5, flooring, chipboard. Tell us what they are, what they do, and what's the history behind them. So you want to kick us off, Andy?
Yeah, and I think I probably should mention plywood, although we're not particularly a big manufacturer of plywood. But plywood was the first big bulk timber panel coming in the UK. I mean, it was actually invented by the Egyptians. Yeah, so it's quite old. I think the prices are probably the same as they were back then. But of course, it has been found in Egyptian tombs.
Really?
Yeah, and it was handmade, kind of veneers.
Okay.
Yeah. But in reality, plywood, the first patent for plywood was back in about 1865, and you'd never guess who took it out, was Mr. Nobel. One of the Nobel, you know, in
really?
Sweden. Yeah, and that was the first patent in Europe for plywood back in the 1860s. And then, of course, it became, as always, Germans took it on, invested, and it was really Germany who started producing plywood in this country. And so that is the oldest panel product.
Okay.
But Gary's more of an expert on plywood than me. So
we buy quite a lot of ply. I mean, in terms of the three products, the OSB, the MDF and the P5 chipboard particle board. Of the three, the one that's really the eldest is the particle board. So that started out. And that's really very granular small pieces of wood that have been ground up.
Yep.
They've got adhesive with them. And we'll remember, you know, the old chipboard in the garage roof, it used to swell up if it got a bit of rain or water on it. Chipboard itself as a raw board product is really a substrate. And a lot of the time it gets covered with something.
Okay.
One way or the other, yep, in order for it to function.
Yep.
But it's a non-structural product.
Yep.
So it's almost a covering to support something, but it's not a structurally rated product.
Right, okay.
That's your chipboard base product.
Yep.
And then after that, MDF was born, which Andy knows quite a bit about.
Yeah, so certainly. Just going back to the particle board, it was really started really as a substrate to keep two surfaces apart. That's all. Mm. And it wasn't till the 80s that technology moved on to put some kind of structural integrity into the boards.
Yeah.
So that was density, which is where P5 flooring comes from. This was density, and it was things like advances in resins. Yeah, and obviously melamine resin for moisture resistancy.
And so, can I jump in, Andy?
Yeah.
Because I remember that T&G chipboard didn't used to be called P5. It was P4. And it wasn't waterproof or moisture resistant.
Yeah, you're right.
And we started out with a sort of a cheaper product, and then it evolved, and the manufacturers put it in, and now that's the de facto.
Does the P5 reference density?
No, there's no particular requirement for density.
Okay. So what's the P5 bit?
Well, originally it was a V313, do you remember?
That's it, right.
Test,
V313,
right?
Yeah.
Which was balmy because that was a French test. And that's the way they tested it. I can't quite remember, but it was boiled three times, frozen, and something else for three times. And it used to, when I started in the industry, that used to be called V313.
Yeah, that's right.
And you've probably forgotten that, yeah?
Yeah, I don't remember the terminology.
Yeah, so, but the, in reality, well, house building used to be a dry construction process, but today the roof is off,
yeah,
everything else, you know, so you get a lot more moisture on the floor. Yeah. So that's why P5 chipboard has actually taken over. And today, I don't think anybody makes non-moisture resistant TNG. Even the DIY sheds don't stock it anymore.
So what, in terms of the floor of P5 for flooring then, what switched everybody from old-fashioned floorboards to chipboards? Speed of laying?
Speed and cost of product as well. Mm. And I think also with the TNG flooring, it was more of a skill job to lay it properly because you didn't just put it up and then nail it.
Yeah.
You had to cramp it, okay, to tension it, yeah, and then you nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it took more time. It was a skill job. And like a lot of things in construction now, you know, de-skilling and making it faster and also getting a technical advantage is what it's all about.
Yeah. There's one thing, Gary, that always makes me laugh, because when I was selling this product back in the 80s, then if you had a squeaky floor and you used floorboards, it was character. It was called character and heritage, right?
Yeah.
But I used to have to go to site because somebody had a squeak in their chipboard floor, right? And in those days, they didn't use much glue, right? But today it's glued and everything else. There. But I remember going to places where there was one squeak in a four-bedroom house, and they were complaining like hell. But yet if it was floorboards, it's kind of the heritage, you know what I mean?
But you're right. And what led to that squeak happening, because the chipboard was perfectly flat, so there's nothing wrong with the chipboard. The problem was the joists and the packing of the joists, or irregularities, because in the old days, we used to regularise all the wood. It didn't come in smooth and finished like it does now. So again, you know, in 25 years ago, it was a different game.
Yeah.
Right, that's enough on chipboard, because we've got two more to go. What do you want, OSB or MDF?
Well, MDF, I think. You know, again, this really came commercially in the 80s. Again, it was developed originally in America. And then I think the first factory was still at Cowie in the UK. That was the first MDF produced here. Shortly after, I think it was about 86, shortly after came Medite. Medite's quite an interesting one, because Medite is almost, until recently maybe, has been a little bit of a generic term. People ask for Medite and they don't necessarily get it from Medite. Yeah. To be absolutely fair, they've done a wonderful job promoting Medite. They spent a lot of money, didn't they?
Yeah.
And not so much these days.
To be fair, I think Medite innovated the usage of MDF.
Yeah.
And they had a massive, great marketing team as well that came up with lots and lots of different uses.
So what actually goes into MDF?
If you take particle board wood chip, these are chips. If you have flooring grade, you have longer chips or particles in the core.
Yep.
So it gives a structural strength. If it's furniture grade, it tends to be more homogeneous, all the way through.
We'll explain what that means in a minute.
Yeah. And then on MDF, you take it one step further, so you have to defibrate it. Yeah, so
you're coming out with some words here, aren't
you?
Defibrate.
I come from Norfolk, you know, we're well educated, you know. And so what happens is, it goes through, and those of you who have been to, Gary's been, I don't know, I'm sure you have as well, Paul, but you take the wood chips. So up until the chipping and the drying, and then it goes through a defibrator that turns it almost into cotton wool.
Okay. Yeah?
So you're breaking the cells down in the wood. So this is why MDF is always, or should be, a little bit more expensive.
You've got a lot more prep work going into make that MDF raw material before it's formed than you have on the chipboard.
A lot of water, a lot of mess.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it is a messy process, but it's well controlled these days, you know. So MDF was the wonder product in the 80s. It was growing like mad on the back of all sorts of DIY programs on the TV.
And shop fitting industry.
Yeah. Today, it's a little bit of a stagnant market, dare I say. It kind of almost run out of steam a bit. But there are interesting new uses, obviously, in mouldings. It's really taken the place.
It's taken over from
softwood. Yeah, your softwood. Now, there's still a little way to go on that, which is why all the moulding manufacturers who produce skirtings, architraves, window boards, this is why they're all investing in new lines.
Yep.
Because at some point, we're going to see an upturn in building, not sure in my lifetime, but at least sometime, right? And basically, there's still a little way to go on that. So there's niches, or big niches, really, in that market that does that, you know? And I think it's about furniture, really, isn't it? We go through these ornate mouldings and whatever. And then we go to Scandinavian kind of Scandi look. But MDF is a great product and it needs to be, find some new uses for it, basically.
So let's move on to the third and final part of our trio.
Yeah. And the other final one is orientated strand board, OSB.
Say that again.
Orientated strand board.
Very good.
Which by definition, orientation is the angle of the product, the length of it, the width of it, the chip particle size.
Yep.
There's a cross layering of that goes into the OSB. Again, it's pressed with resin and binders. The strands, if you were to look at what a raw material piece of OSB, the flakes, it's a very long, thin flake that might be 2 or 3 inches long, okay. And then they're pressed with a cross ply.
Yep.
Started out, it used to be called OSB 2.
Yep.
Now, I don't believe you can buy OSB 2. I don't think it's made anymore.
Well, we can make it, but we're not asked for it.
There's no demand for it.
In Europe, some.
Okay. But UK, not. And it's mainly, primarily now, OSB 3. And OSB 3's got a moisture inhibitor. It's not moisture proof. You can't put it in a tank of water and it's not going to work.
Yeah.
It has to be kept dry. So far better than chipboard, structurally rated.
Yeah.
It's a super product. I bought lots of it in my time and I've even got it in my loft as well. Better than chipboard. And if it did get a little bit of a wetting, it doesn't swell up, it doesn't react. It's not as reactive as what a chipboard
is. Is it OSB that you see where people are boarding up windows nowadays?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's one of the problems that OSB had, because the first company to make it was I think again in 1983, I think, was Highland Forest Products, which probably everybody's forgotten that name, but that became Norbord. Yeah. So, but they didn't actually build the original factory. It was Highland Forest Products with I think it was venture capital money, you know. I still remember this because there was riots going on in the UK. And at the time, I think it was Tottenham riots, was it, or something like that. And basically, they had a huge advertising campaign to use it in shed roofs and boarding up shops. And for many years, everybody thought that's what it was. It was so difficult for manufacturers then to turn it into a properly engineered product, which it always was. But in the early days, and you'll remember this, Gary, you had to buy conditioned OSB.
Yeah.
It was conditioned.
Go on, explain that.
Well, conditioned, you had to treat it and let it move, because if not, it would have moved like hell on site, wouldn't it?
So you had to let it settle before you could acclimatise.
But today, OSB 3, the resin technology has moved on million percent, you know, and today there's no conditioning. But amazingly, we still get asked for conditioned OSB, which doesn't exist anymore. So that was the thing. Just going back to the difference, when you have particle board, it's chipped up in drums, really, really. So it goes through mesh and you get whatever size chip you want. With OSB, it's flaked. So you're talking about flakes rather. But the rest of the process, apart from...
It's like slices, isn't it?
Yeah, slices. Sliced. It's knives that do it, yeah?
Yeah.
And basically, the rest of the process of OSB compared with particle board or chipboard is virtually the same.
And so its uses, other than boarding up windows after riots and shed roofs, is what?
It's moved on now, so it's a structurally rated product. Yep. It's an engineered product. Yep. It's used widely in SIPS panelling for roofing systems.
Okay.
It's regulated and it's approved for flooring as a structural product and also for walls. As Andy says, it's not just a base product for shuttering something up now. Mm. It's now a product that it's got its own specific end use.
Yeah, okay. And it's been taking market share from plywood for quite a while.
Right. Okay.
And there's still a bit to go.
I think the common theme there is that no matter which product you look at, over time, the UK, not just the UK, but the end users and the market has developed that product, so it's become better.
Mm.
And I think that's just the usage demand of wanting to use these.
Yeah.
These alternatives.
Yeah, it's like all three of those products have
all improved.
All the derivatives then come out of it, don't they?
Yeah.
So the base product of all those was fairly primitive. And I mean, MDF took over from hardboard. Remember that?
So almost like saying like Gen 1 OSB was the basic product. Gen 2 OSB is all singing technical, all dancing.
Yeah.
And there's going to be future products which will be more FR related and fire related.
Yeah.
I think we're seeing OSB used in hoarding now, and it's also being sanded, it's been coated. Mm. So it's prolonging the usage and it's extending and widening the usage of the base product. And that's just because I think by nature, you know, we as people want to get the best out of a product.
Everything we can, yeah, and yeah. Keep moving.
With OSB, the big growth is going to come as the big builders move towards timber frame.
Okay.
Now, we know at the moment England is lacking behind in timber frame, but it's growing very quick now.
It's coming.
And each house uses 5 cubic metres on average. If you say 3 bedrooms, attached, 5 cubic metres of OSB is used in every house. Now, in a masonry built house, not much OSB at all. There's P5 chipboard, of course.
Yeah.
But that's what's going to really drive things. You know?
There's obviously worktops there. There's the MDF skirtings that have been manufactured that we produce at Arbor. And then, as you say, you've also got I-joist now instead of timber joist. So they've got OSB in the construction of the I-joist on the panelling that goes in the middle.
Yeah. Just take you back to timber frame, and you talked about England is behind the rest of the UK. Can you tell a bit more about that? What kind of timber frame rates are there in other parts of the UK?
Well, obviously in Scotland, they say it's 90%,
really?
but actually it seems almost like 100% when you're in Scotland, which is really weird because they have the most violent weather up there.
Okay.
In Wales, I can't remember the exact figure, but it's something like 30, 40% because Wales are quite green.
When you look at them percentages, they sound high. But if you look at the number of houses that are actually built in Scotland, 90%, you know, of 500 or 1,000 is less than 20% of 200,000.
What will drive an increase, though, in England?
Well, it's obviously we have a particularly different model than in Europe. We have big house builders who are really big.
Yep.
So a big house builder in Germany builds 2,000 houses. A big house builder in UK build 20,000 houses.
Okay.
At least that's his theory. You know? And of course, some of the bigger ones are getting bigger. So you now have a top three house builder, which is, to be slightly contentious, is a really bad model for the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe, you know. And you've got... Are you thinking
from a choice perspective?
Yeah, from a choice, yeah. So you've got different brands, but they're all really, you know, the same company. So the top three builders now are pulling away from the rest,
mm-hmm.
yeah? Even the rest of the top 10 are dropping back. So I don't think this is a good thing, you know, for consumers. But what's happening now is, and I know from one of those top three very recently, having spoken to them, is that they've all bought timber frame companies or they've put in timber frame factories in the last 2 years. Other ones who are already established are looking at a second factory. So it seems to me that on the lower end of the build in England, which is 2-3 bedroom first-time buyers' houses, something like 80% of those houses will go to timber frame with those big builders.
And is that driven by speed? Is it driven by sustainability?
Yeah.
What drives it?
Yeah, it's speed, it's security of supply, I think. And they've all got their carbon targets.
Okay.
And that's the easiest way to
achieve it.
It's also
consistency of build as well and gets back to the de-skilling element as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Let's keep the conversation moving because I want to get onto the market and some of the stuff that's happened this year and what's coming in the future. But before we do, we better talk a little bit about Kronospan. Tell us a little bit about Kronospan, the history, where you are, what you do, and then also you were making a good point to me, Gary, about the Kronospan products in your house. What did you kind of say?
I think Kronospan are like they form the fabric and the skeleton of what goes in your property, alongside with the joist, obviously, through Timberside and I-joist. But, you know, if you were to take all them products out, you can't see them, but they're all around you. They're absolutely essential.
So Kronospan's probably the biggest brand in most people's houses that you don't know about.
You've never heard of,
secret.
Tell us about Kronospan.
Okay, Kronospan is the biggest wood panel product company in Europe by a long, long way. They are now developing more in North America. They have plans, obviously, to be absolutely the number one in the world. Amazingly, it's still a family business.
Okay.
And it's run today by the two sons, which are very dynamic people. And they are both in, I still think, I might be wrong, sorry, but I think they're still both under 40. So it's incredible business.
Andy, what generation of the family are they?
The fifth generation.
Okay, so you're a couple
generation
behind Howarth's.
We are. Seven.
Are you really?
Seven.
Yeah. So when Howarth started, they'd be supplying Wattle and Daub.
We've got a lot in common there, haven't we? Private ownership
actually,
and multi-generation.
Yeah, we don't need venture capitalists, that's for sure. And Kronospan are very dynamic. They started in 1897 in a small village near Salzburg in Austria. They were a sawmill. and I think it was two brothers, and they, you know, on a horse, you know, and not much happened for a while, but they gradually started to do. But this generation and the last generation, the father is still Mr. Kindle, Peter Kindle is still active. It's just been investment boom. Every year, no matter what the conditions are, and we've been through some really tough years the last 4 or 5 years, they invest 1 billion euros every year.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to mention competitors, but as you well know, particularly you, Gary, that some people are not investing anything. Yeah. If you don't invest in this world, these are big boys' toys. Yeah. If you don't invest, you collapse and go. And we've seen it over the years. People have just gone.
Yeah.
One of my old employers, when I was the MD at Pujos, they didn't invest.
Yeah.
And they're gone. So investment is vital. But that's a heck of a thing. And to give you an idea now, we have 40 factories and they are all massive. For instance, our factory in the UK in Chirk is 100 acres. And that's kind of mid-sized. All of them, I believe, make more than two products. There could be the odd one that's heavy in laminate flooring. And the first, we just opened an OSB factory in the Ukraine during a war. We have 40 factories. Most of those factories now are multi-product. Mm-hmm. So the art of Kronspan is to make a lot of products on one site. Another real driver is where we have a new site. So if it's a greenfield site or brownfield, we then buy all the land around it and we invite our customers to come and set up next to us. Now, in the UK, in Chirk, we're a bit hemmed in by mountains and the village, but it's not possible in the UK. But where we have a fresh palette, like Luxembourg, for instance, then you get other people setting up moulding manufacturing, furniture manufacturing.
Or
a cluster.
Processing.
Yeah, yeah. So they're next to the raw material. But Chirk was the first major overseas investment. So it's hopefully got a little bit of a special place.
Sentimentality.
When I was 17, one of my little projects, one of my directors asked me to do was get on a train and go to Chirk.
Yeah.
And I had a factory tour when I was 17, so it was a good few years ago. And I had to come back and I had to draw out the whole factory layout. And they were quite impressed with what I remembered because it was quite a good drawing.
Yeah.
When I went there recently, it wasn't that different, but there's less dust on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
There's more shiny things around.
Yeah.
And from a health and safety point of view, yeah, you know, everything's really
yeah, we employ 600 and, well, it depends who I listen to, but something around 660 people in the UK, 660. Cranky. So we are major, we're one of the biggest.
And what about across the whole portfolio? How many people do you employ?
15,000.
So it's 40 factories, 15,000.
Yeah, 15,000. But there's more than that because, you know, they're employing people all the time.
So you've got 40 factories all across Europe, yeah. 15,000 people, the largest manufacturer of panel products in Europe.
And one of the very largest in the world.
Still privately owned and invested a billion euros a year on development.
Collectively, what sort of turnover does the whole group do, Andy? Are we talking billions?
Yeah, but we're not a group, right? So there is no figures on that because every factory is a profit centre.
Okay.
Yeah. So we are Kronspan Limited.
Yeah.
I mean, you can take a stab at it, but we don't have a group. So what I can tell you is that we produce 18 million cubic metres a year. And to put that into perspective, that's 640,000 truckloads, right?
Wow.
That's the kind of figures you can relate to, isn't it?
And you produce all three of those products, OSB, MDF, chipboard.
Yeah, we also do a lot of flooring in Europe, and we have Kronospan brand, we have the Kindle brand.
Decorative yeah. Flooring.
Flooring is quite important for us. We're developing more and more here. We try and sell it to him.
Kronospan UK, at Chirk, they manufacture the Party World P5 chipboard.
Yeah.
They manufacture the MDF. They manufacture the MR MDF there.
Yeah.
And they do the flooring and they do worktops.
And worktops, yeah.
But OSB product isn't actually manufactured in the UK yet. So that's imported in currently from Luxembourg or from Riga sometimes. Mm. And we do trade that as well. But because it's a commodity that's so important to us in our timber, I mean, it's in them products featuring our top 30 products that we sell.
Yeah. Mm.
I think there's at least two or three SKUs of each. So they really are key.
Yeah.
and everything's commodity and price-based, so we do oscillate a little bit between different manufacturers to try and get the best deal for our customers.
If it's such a big commodity product, why don't you manufacture OSB in the UK?
Well, we're going to. We've got. Yeah. If you come to Chirk now, you will see that part of the infrastructure is in. There is one big problem in the UK, and that is planning.
Yeah.
Planning, right? Although everybody or every government, depending what whatever colour it is, always want investment. We have been now seven or eight years in planning. We're just about there. The line will be in place within the next two and a half years.
Nice.
But for those rumours in the market that say we're not going to do it, they are wrong. It is doing that. But to give you an idea, we've built three OSB factories in Europe, one of which is in a war zone. Right, quicker than we can get planning from the bloody government.
Well, that's some slamming up in general, isn't it?
And I mean, it is a disease in the UK, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
And also, we have to. We're now putting a cable in to link us up to the grid, because the grid is not cannot carry in and out.
Let's move on now. I want to talk about the market. How 25's been, you know, how you see 26, where you see any pinch points or anything changing. So, in one word. Describe the 2025 wood panel market for me.
Grim.
Grim? Shit. Very good. I could see in his eyes.
Yeah,
I think he was looking for a more delicate way.
It was a good four-letter word.
Go on, expand.
Yeah. Well, to expand, actually, for Cronspan, I can speak for that, we've actually grown quite a lot, particularly in building products, despite everything. So, but we've only grown because we've taken business. We're very busy. It's making a margin. A margin. And margins are so squeezed because our costs are going up all the time. And we are still profitable in the UK, which I don't think everybody is, which is a good thing. You need profitable suppliers. You know, you don't need suppliers who are maybe not here in a few years. But basically, it's margin. Margins have been squeezed. And we're being dictated to, the whole chain, by the end consumers a bit, you know, who are shopping around.
I think that issue is the same issue across the whole industry, isn't it? Whether you're a tradesperson, a builder, merchant.
And to be fair, I mean, we deal in domestic products and we deal a lot with imported products. And, you know, there are Chinese imports of MDF that are coming into the country. And China's economy isn't in a great position. And them factories are not looking to retain that and cease.
Yeah.
So that's going to be here for some time. It's going to be aggressive competition on product. There's quality differentiators.
Did you say aggressive? I think absolutely unfair competition is the word.
And you know, it's traveling 6,000 miles. It takes 6 weeks on a ship to get here, and it's sold.
So it's carbon
potentially
terrific.
Yeah. Cheaper.
Well, yeah, it is. And well, this is by, I can get on my high horse now, but why the hell we bring things all the way from China when we make them in Europe, right? There's a cost implication.
It's not a very green journey, is it?
No, it's not green, but there's a bigger problem here is that obviously Mr. Trump is putting tariffs on, or threatening to put tariffs on everything. You've got the EU have put anti-dumping on Chinese now. And of course, our dear friends in government in the UK are very unlikely to put anything in terms of tariffs or anti-dumping on. Mm-hmm. We could become and are becoming the dumping ground for China. Right, not just
because they can't go into
Europe. It's 65%, I think, the anti-dumping. So Europe, I'm not buying Chinese plywood, for instance. But in the UK, we're going to be the dumping ground, and I'm afraid government of any colour in the UK are just not in the mind to do that, are they? You know, we're all this free, but we're quite happy at Cronospan to compete with anybody on MDF, but we can't compete with a country who are subsidising it. Look what's happening in the car industry. How many BYD cars have you seen?
What products are coming in from China? Just plywood.
Plywood, MDF,
Plywood and MDF.
Just plywood and MDF, yes.
Plywood, I understand.
Softwood plywood, hardwood plywood. See, they are the world's largest producer now. And
why do you understand plywood? Because there's
not much alternative. Yeah, that's the thing. MDF, where do you think the wood comes from?
Well, Europe, I guess, all the places we would buy timber from. Scandinavia?
Russia,
okay.
Yeah, now that's supposed to be...
Is this conspiracy theory then?
No.
The Russians and Chinese?
Russia, Belarus. The truth is, it's difficult to prove, but we have factory in China making flooring, you know, laminate flooring.
So within the timber industry, the building industry, that there's a big focus on sustainability. We were chatting beforehand, yeah. And one of you talked about, well, are we committed to it, or is it just greenwashing?
Yeah.
Why are we allowing Chinese MDF to come in then at the same time as preaching sustainability
good
and circularity?
Good question, isn't it? We have to jump, not just we at Kronspan, but all the UK and Irish manufacturers, we have to jump through all the hoops. And some of the product coming in is supposedly sustainable, but...
How can you claim it's sustainable if it's coming on a boat from China?
It has met UK due diligence requirements. Okay. So the companies that are primarily importing it, we don't import it. Howard don't import it. Mm. But other companies are directly importing, and they've got to conduct full due diligence on the product cycle. Mm. And that's obviously been satisfied. So it's nothing that's illegitimate that's coming through, but it does create a real cost pressure for people like Kronospan.
Yeah.
And it's a case of supply and demand and price, and price is a driver.
It's like a lot of things when it comes to sustainability, and everybody's for sustainability until it costs you more.
Yeah, that's true. And I think the only way forward, there's no quick fix to this, right? But the only way forward for European manufacturers, I think, is to up the standards, take out even more formaldehyde, make it so only the high-tech European producers can produce a standard. And there is work going on that. But the other thing that's going to change is the amount of recycled material. Now, at the moment, chipboard, P5, the board we supply you is 100% recycled.
Yeah.
This is post-consumer waste. And on OSB, we're the first in the world to put 20% recycled. And the reason for that is that the new factories, and when we open in Wales, it will be 5 layers. So normally they're 3 layers. But if you've got 5 layers, it's over-engineered. So in the middle, you can kind of put some recycled material. Okay. That's the future of OSB. Yeah. And then on MDF, it's been a big problem, because you're defibrating, you're breaking the cells down, right?
But it's a really good thing, though, because it means some people might listen to this and go, well, what does that matter? Well, the really good thing is it's not going into landfill.
Mm.
It's been reused. Okay. So all that stuff that goes down to the tip, you know, the people fill the wooden skips up, then products do eventually find their way through the waste streams.
Yeah.
Coming back as, in, and get reground and going to that
it's
production.
It's funny how things change, isn't it? Because we were talking the other week, and you were talking about back in the day, the big boast on chipboard flooring was virgin wood, and that's what made it great.
That's why we've done so well from Scandinavia, because it was 100% virgin wood. Today...
But nowadays, you'd be lynched, wouldn't you?
Well, you'd be lynched, and also you wouldn't be able to compete, you know? And
well, I'm not going to mention anything about certain power station burning lots of Canadian forest from virgin fibre.
We won't
talk about that.
No, it's just incredible.
That's another conversation.
Yeah. But I think going forward now, we are definitely moving towards the technology to use, I'm not saying 100% recycled, but if we could get 20% recycled into MDF, that makes us more competitive against the Chinese and things like that. So I think that's the way to handle this. We can't rely on government, you know.
And that's what makes it truly sustainable, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's filling the full cycle of the cradle to grave and reuse. Yeah.
I know a lot of people said, we're not being asked for it. Where it's coming now, house builders are starting to get interested, the bigger ones. But where it's coming from is through DIY and things. So people like B&Q and also kitchens like Wren Kitchens, who obviously use a lot of chipboard in their worktops, they are really, really into this modern technology. They want everything to be recycled. And what we can do is we can say to someone like Wren, when you replace a kitchen in 20 years' time, we're going to recycle it. I mean, we have our own recycle centres. We have two of them now.
But just for clarity, we're not talking about chipboard going into kitchen doors. That's for going into worktops.
And carcasses.
And carcass.
Yeah.
And the doors are MDF.
Yeah. But so we can recycle a percentage of MDF to go back into chipboard. But when we manufacture MDF, at the moment, it's small diameter round. We don't knock big trees down. It's forest thinnings. That will gradually change into a percentage of recycling.
It's a random question, Andy, and if you haven't got the numbers, don't worry about it, but just your opinion on it is what I'd be interested in. Mm. If you were to take all the merchants that buy from you, whether they're buying groups or merchants, as a sector, what percentage of your production at Chirk are the merchants responsible for?
I have to be careful what I say here, don't I? But it's more than 50%.
So yeah. Merchants are really important, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
So your mix is different industries, yeah. And you've expanded, and again, your products have flown into all these different areas. But yeah. Merchants, the base commodity items, which yeah. is what we come back to, your OSB, yeah. 8x4s, your MRMDFs, mm-hmm. and your TNG chipboard 8x2s. And of course, don't forget OSB roofing, which we are massive on,
yeah.
and we do very, very well with our flat roof systems.
Yeah,
we buy a lot of that product, and yours is a full 600 as well, which is great. Yeah.
I think these products to many people are not sexy, yeah. the core products. I mean, not many people get excited about the sheet.
I don't know how you can say that.
Well, you know.
They are sexy. Yeah, yeah. They're fantastic.
I prefer,
that's because you've lived your lives in timber, yeah, so you're bound to find them sexy.
I prefer something a bit more exotic, you know. But basically,
you travel more than
me. Yeah, I travel with you, yeah. But basically, it's worth remembering that the market in the UK for wood-based panels, including plywood, sorry, is £1.8 billion.
Unbelievable.
That's the market.
Where does all that go?
£1.8 billion.
Where does all that go in a slowdown?
And that's actually come down a bit, you know, in the last couple of years. And in Europe, it's 58 billion euros. That's what the market is worth.
So what do you think, so this year has been grim or shit in our terminology. What's your views on 26? Is it more of the same? Are we going to see some growth? Is there any particular product line that's going to see growth for some reason?
I think if you take P5 chipboard, which is quite important to merchants like yourself, that's more of a domestic skirmish, mm-hmm. right? So nobody else except one in Belgium makes P5 chipboard. In Europe, all the flooring is OSB. Eventually, that's what will change here, right? But we're very conservative, aren't we, with the small C. Nobody likes change in the UK.
We like to do things the way we've always done them.
That's right. And then P5, so P5 is more of a domestic skirmish. MDF is more of a European skirmish with a bit coming in from the... And don't get me wrong, the volume from China compared with what's used in Europe is still quite small.
Yeah.
But it's irritable. It makes me irritable, you know what I mean? But the OSB market is global. What happens in America, North America today, comes back and bites us in 3 or 4 months' time. For instance, prices went down steeply in America because Trump's tariffs kind of worried everybody. Yeah. And then suddenly, in the last couple of weeks, boom, it's gone shooting up. So what happens there is if the American market is really good, and this affects plywood as well, you'll see a lot of the South American plywood drift to North America, which is coming to Europe. Prices might go up. Mm-hmm. But OSB, there are quite a few of the European manufacturers, us included, who are sending OSB there. Obviously, we're building our first OSB factory in the States at the moment. Okay. So that will take some of that. So OSB, it's global, right? So on the American market, it's a commodity quoted on the stock exchange. Yeah, OSB. Here,
like we'd have copper over here or lead.
Yeah. In the UK, we tend to try and give people 4 weeks' notice of a price increase. In North America, it can change daily. Yeah.
What drives the market in America then? Why is it so important there?
Well, there's a lot of timber frame building.
It's timber frame building.
Timber building. When the building industry is down, as it has been in the States, then everything goes down really. I mean, it's a huge country.
But what about here for us in the UK next year on OSB? Is it all pretty flat? We need interest rates to drop and housing
Well, what we need is this rapid change that's coming on timber building.
Yep.
The only problem for you guys in the chain, in merchant chain, is that some of those big factories that the house builders make, they buy direct. It could be that it's a problem for merchants a little bit.
Yep.
And this is not us. We're very small in timber frame at the moment. Yeah. But when they can buy full loads, 12 loads a month or something, they're kind of going to look at going to the manufacturer direct. And again, I'm not speaking about Kronspan. We're very small in timber frame. But this is what's going to drive the market. The thing that might temper it is the cost of plywood. If that goes low, then it affects the calling trade that you have.
Yeah. There's a dynamic link between coniferous plywood prices and OSB prices. Yeah. And if they get out of sync in either direction, then there's going to be a correction at some point.
Switches.
The timber build in the UK is going to grow quicker than we think. In England,
do you think you could start seeing that next year? So could
well. We one of the biggest house builders told us that 80% of their one of their brands, the cheaper brand they have, is going to be timber frame. At the moment, it's 30%. So it's, you'll see more and more timber building in that starter home, two, yeah. three bedroom yeah. kind of semis and things yeah. like that. So that's the interesting thing. So this is why you've seen so much increase in OSB. I mean, Kronospan has 9 OSB factories in Europe. Shortly, we'll have 12, you know. So, I mean, this is
a lot of investment. When we start our planning and forecasting for next year, what advice are you going to give Gary and I for what we need to say to Nick about the panel market?
Well, before you answer that, just give you pause for thought. One thing we're not going to do next year is switch all our P5 for OSB and be the first ones to do it.
No, because, I wouldn't. You know, I would suggest
our customers want early. P5 yeah. chipboard offers, yeah. and yeah. With a 100-120 day warranty on the film boards.
Absolutely.
You've given him enough pause for thought. Yeah, you've been too kind to him.
Yeah, yeah. You don't.
Our jobs are on the line. What do we tell Nick Howarth about the panel market?
Yeah, I think it's going to be for sure tough first 6 months next year, unless we get a budget that really does encourage some growth, which is probably not going to happen.
Do you think that's going to happen?
No.
Gary Froggatt, my view is I think next year will be very similar to this year.
Yeah.
I can't see a lot of change other than costs will increase more next year to run a business.
Yeah.
And we're still going to struggle then to generate, as Andy says, a sustainable, profitable business. That's what everybody's trying to drive for.
The margins in the supply chains are really under pressure, as we all know. Sooner or later, that's got to be dealt with, because if you're going to invest £1 billion billion euros every year, then you've got to generate money.
I think one of our concerns is going to be because of the three or four first places into the market. You know, if one of them drops a product and goes, we're going to shortcut that, we're not making enough money on that, we're going to focus on something else, that'll give us less choice. And as Andy alluded to with the house building, less choice for the consumer is not great. So, you know, that would be bad for us. That would be, I think, a retrograde step.
Yeah.
I think having choice as to where you go to is healthy for the market.
Can you see any supply chain issues then, as Gary's intimating there, in the market?
Yeah, I can. I think the particular danger is P5 chipboard, unless somebody comes out of the woodwork in Europe who wants to make it. I mentioned earlier it's more of a domestic skirmish between the UK manufacturers. You would only need 5-6% increase in demand.
Really?
And we could be in trouble. You have to remember that we are the only company at Kronospan who have increased our production. We doubled our production. There is nobody else in the UK who've got any plans to up that. Our next step will be to put a second tongue and groove line in. So we haven't got a problem with getting baseboard.
So your focus would be on a second line of P5. What have you talked about OSB tongue and groove flooring, and you're just putting a new OSB line in?
Yeah, well, that will be where it is. So we will.
Could you switch them chipboard lines over to be producing OSB lines if the market did flip? And there was more demand for the flooring OSB.
Yeah, you have to change the whole back end of the factory because your knives and flaking. The actual production line is similar, except OSB needs a much higher roof. And if you go to Chirk, you'll see the roof has gone up. Yeah, so it's not so easy. But there's been little or no investment in particle board chipboard over Europe in recent time, and suddenly we are now investing a lot of money in Spain, in Luxembourg. We're putting new lines in. Could we put a second line in, chipboard line in? Yes. I'm not sure quite where it would go if it's OSB. Particle board is now being invested in again, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And MDF is probably the area where could do with we need more volume. We need more sales volume. Okay. You know.
Right. I'm just interested in your final thoughts. Been a really interesting conversation covering lots of areas. I've learned a lot, and you've just proved that you two are real timber nerds, because we can't stop you talking.
Sad old geeks.
That was a compliment, by the way. Well, I was just going to say, the opening comment, we've got 87 years between us.
God.
That's just re-ratio how that splits. Andy's 70. He's not. I'm interested to wrap us up. Yeah. I'm interested in both of your final set of thoughts from you both. I think the Chinese products are going to stay in the market, as I said, because their economy is not going to succumb back. That's going to keep pressures on domestic producers. The demand's still going to be there for products, even though it's subdued from what we want to see. We've still got a lot of product. We sell a lot of chipboard. We sell a lot of OSB in Howard Timber. Mm. And, you know, we've got good access to products. We can get more. So we don't have a supply problem. The only constraint I can see is perhaps our market is going to be difficult.
we're not out of the woods by any means. It's going to be a tough year next year, and we've just got to keep grinding it away.
It's good.
And the important thing is keeping good relationships with our suppliers. And Kronospan have been very, very supportive. We work really closely, as we do with others, but we really value that relationship. And I remember going to see your CEO with a couple of other chaps 6 or 7 years ago, just setting the scene for the future. And it's great that, you know, we've actually got to that position where we're important to each other, which is great.
Yeah,
really appreciate that.
Andy, your final thoughts?
Yeah, and I think 10 years ago, I mean, I've been with Kronospan 6 years. They had a new youth policy when I joined 6 years ago. And basically, we all forget that 10 years ago, Kronospan weren't full-time in the building industry. Mm. Today, it's a really big part of that. And I sometimes just think, where would the market be if Kronospan hadn't have invested that money and hadn't have come in here? Mm. I don't know where it was coming from. As always, somebody comes out of the woodwork somewhere. But I think we forget that we are the ones who doubled in production. And we still have some capacity to, and we still have some efficiencies to do. I think with Gary, it's going to be a tough year next year. I'm a little bit more optimistic in the second half of the year, because no matter how bad a government we have, they throw enough money at everything. Something's got to move. So it is that profitability in the chain, not just for us, but look at some of your competitors out there in the merchant world. You know, they've got big loans to pay back. They've got a lot of issues, some of those. And when we come out of this this cycle, which is always a cycle, some of those venture capital people are going to be running for the hills, aren't they? And I think in the next 2 or 3 years, you'll see a lot of consolidation, a lot of changes in the ownership of merchants. Of course, seven generations of Howard, there must be an eighth one coming.
There is, they're all coming through, aren't they, the next generation?
So you're fine.
It's a long way to continue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, listen, it's been really, really interesting getting your views, so thank you for that. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like a recap of some of the key takeaways that we've learned from Andy and Gary, if you go over to our website, we're going to post up a companion blog. So we're going to summarise what we've talked about there. So you can go and have a look at that. And while you're there, you can find links to all our previous episodes of the podcast. And you can even see our latest company news, our latest promotions, our latest offers, because we've got to sell some stuff, Gary Froggatt, haven't we?
Absolutely.
And of course, we are much more than just timber.
Of course.
I'd also just like to finish off by just talking a little bit about our company charity this year, Andy's Man Club, which is really important to us. Andy's Man Club is a male suicide prevention charity who are aiming to break down the stigma around male mental health via their It's Okay to Talk campaign. A couple of shocking facts about suicide, which is not nice to talk about, but it is important to raise and spread the word. Suicide is the biggest killer of men under the age of 50 in the UK. And even more shockingly, suicide in the construction industry is 4 times the national average. So it's a real problem in our industry. And Andy's Man Club are really trying to change that by giving a safe space for men to go and talk, listen and support each other. They've got over 300 clubs across the UK. It's open to any man over the age of 18. Meetings run every Monday night between 7 and 9, except for bank holidays. They're totally free. There's no need to book. There's no need for any referrals. All you do is you just turn up. There's no pressure. You sit and talk if you want. You sit and listen if you want. But you know that there's a supportive group there for you. So if you are in the middle of a storm right now, or you can see a storm brewing somewhere in the future and you think you could do with some help, if you go onto the Andy's Man Club website and put in your postcode, you'll find your local club and you can just go there. And just remember, to every man watching this, us in here and everybody out there, it's okay to talk. Now, to finish and wrap this up in a positive frame after that, and it's paying a little bit of homage to Andy's Man Club, at the end of every meeting group that they have, they always finish with a random question that's upbeat, positive, and everybody leaves on a high. They very kindly have put an assortment of those questions onto this pack of cards. And what I'm going to ask you two to do is pick a card for each other and answer the question that pops up to finish the podcast off. So,
goodness.
You pick a card for Gary and read him the question.
I can't see without my glasses.
Shall I read it for you?
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. I should have brought my glasses as well.
Yeah.
Right, Gary, if you could choose to do anything for a day, what would it be?
Ooh.
I'd like to go skiing. I'd like to learn to ski. But my aerodynamics are not great for that. So, but I'd love to do it. Yeah. That would be
What's wrong with your aerodynamics?
Speed. It's the knees. It's the knees.
No, it's the knees. It's not
you could be snowboarder, you know.
It's yours would be to go and ski.
I'd like to come back.
That's good. Right. This is yours, Andy.
God.
So, Andy, if you could help someone this week, who would it be and why?
I think I'd help Donald Trump. and I'd help Donald Trump to end this carnage in Ukraine. He seems to have done some kind of job in Gaza. So let's keep the momentum going because it makes the world a better place, doesn't it?
That's fantastic.
Well said.
And I tell you what, there's not a better place to finish than that. Of let's make the world a better place. Right, guys, thank you for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed it. Remember, you can go to our website and get a blog that summarises everything that we've talked about today. Thanks for listening. There's more episodes coming soon. If you have enjoyed it, if you could like and subscribe, and the best thing that you could do that we really, really would appreciate is if you'd spread the word about our podcast and tell somebody who you know who might be interested in the podcast that we're here. So thank you very much. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you again next time. Thank you very much.